Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda Ellsworth, and I've got a great guest in store for you today. Mark Zablow is the founder and CEO of Cogent Entertainment Marketing, a leading influencer marketing firm. It is my pleasure to welcome Mark to the show.
Belinda, thank you for having me. This is exciting.
It is. So let's dive right in, Mark, and tell me a little bit more about your company and what you do. But tell us about that journey. Fill us in on that bio and give us a little bit more details on how you got where you are today.
Sure. So Cogent, we call ourselves an influencer marketing firm. Today, the word influencer is a very big word. Back in 2011, when we were coming to market with that form of marketing, Instagram wasn't really a platform yet. Social media was just still evolving. We believed in, you know, one very important factor. We believe that trust of and a recommendation from a friend is one of the most influential forms of driving a consumer's interest and a consumer's purchase. We found that what we call through influencer marketing, by connecting with people of influence, not just people with high social media value, but people like celebrities, people like DJs, people like managers, publicists, the people behind the scenes, that by putting the right product in the right people's hands, whether that's through social media, through events, through creating content, that we can help influence the masses. And while my career started early on, way before social media, as social media has evolved over the last few years, that has really helped drive the explosion of what social media is. But I was very lucky to get my start in the, let's call it, entertainment industry on the nightlife side of the business. I always told my mom I work in the corporate side of nightlife, which didn't make sense to a lot of people then. But Randy Gerber from Casamigos fame ran a phenomenal organization in partnership with the W Hotels. There, I got my first experience as a promotions or marketing coordinator, intern, whatever you'd have it, touching what I'd like to call live ammo, seeing the world of celebrities, corporate America, consumers, high net worth individuals, you know, large spends really come to life. And that really got me the bug early on of seeing how you can really mix art and commerce and monetize that for a career. Always kind of had that conversation with friends, family, other people. Well, what do? You work in nightclubs. And it's always very hard to explain that there's actually a corporation managing 20 plus venues. We, you know, we treat this as a real business. We're usually home before the clubs even open. And, you know, being around that, I learned a couple things at the right time. If you think about the early 2000s with the explosion of celebrity, I learned the power of celebrity. I learned what access meant, getting into places, being able to let people into places, really helped me get somewhere at an early age. And from that, you know, what I like to say is paying it forward, being able to do favors for people, whether they were people of importance yet or not, it allowed me to build up a lot of clout. And so after a couple of years doing that, I got, again, very lucky, and I was able to join a larger, what I call celebrity marketing machine called Platinum Rye Entertainment. And, you know, right then in 2004, you know, the explosion of, you have your reality stars, you have all your mass media, you have all your big TV brands pivoting over to celebrities and your Super Bowl spots, I was able to really put my passion to work and really see it come to life. After 7 years of doing that at some of the highest levels with brands like Procter & Gamble and the NFL, I was, you know, able to strike. And when I say strike, I like to say when preparation met opportunity. And I was given the opportunity to launch what we called an influencer marketing agency. And we believe that the power of celebrity, the power of influence, can be transformed transformed from doing big things on TV and Super Bowl spots into more non-traditional ways, like creating content, getting products in people's hands to be talked about, you know, creating experiences and events. And so, you know, fast forward to today, we're 50 plus people helping corporate America, you know, what we like to say, translate cool factor. We target that millennial and Gen Z customer because that's who we are. And we like to think that we're marketing products that we know how to speak about and that we know how to talk to the customer.
Wow, that sounds pretty exciting.
It's been fun. It's eight years going on 25, but we're having fun with it.
Oh, that's great. So then how has the business? So you worked on the corporate side for quite a bit of time, and now you're kind of in the driver's seat. You've got your own business. You started out probably with just a handful of people, and now you're 50-plus organization. How's that shaped your lifestyle today?
You know, it was funny. When we worked in nightlife back in the day, everybody thought we had this work-life balance of partying at night and, you know, sleeping all day. And it was truly the opposite. We worked all day. And then we had to try to stay up, you know, through the evenings to see our product come to life. And during those days, I'd walk around with some of my colleagues. And I'll never forget my boss, Eugene Rem, at the time. He would always say to me, he'd said, "Hey, you know, you never know, you know, if you're going to be on the right track here, but you're showing up every day, you're dressing how you want, you're speaking to people in a culture you want to be involved in, and you're living your work-life balance. You're not like what we would see down the block at maybe Citi or some of these financial firms with 10 people dressed in the same blue shirt and the same pair of pants. And, you know, while they could be on a different financial path or they're, you know, they're excelling in what they're doing, it's dull." And from someone who always said, like, the fear of being normal is, you know, one of my biggest fears, I never wanted it to be boring. And so being in a marketing solutions, you know, focus of targeting people like millennials, like Gen Z, being able to kind of, you know, dress how we dress, express ourselves in the way that we live our life, the way we travel, the way we represent ourselves, you know, responsibly on social media and share what we're up to. It's built a very favorable work-life balance. We've never really said that we're going to let money be the sole driver in what we do. Yes, I think, you know, we need to make a certain amount of money to enjoy what we do and live in big cities or, you know, work the amount of hours that we work or work at the level we work. But we want to be comfortable and express ourselves. So luckily, being in our world, you know, wearing a t-shirt or the right pair of sneakers sometimes gets you a little further than it would in some rooms where wearing sneakers may not let you get into the room.
Right. So what I want to kind of dive into here is everybody's got their own special superpowers, if you will. So what are a couple of really great skill sets that you think have contributed to your ongoing success?
You know, especially early on, coming up in an industry of like the entertainment community, you know, it's not about what you know. It's a lot about who you know. I've always tried to find ways to add value. I found that, especially today's day and age, where there is Google, there is LinkedIn, you know, when I was trying to get into the industry, it was very hard to find information on people, information on events, information on places to go. There were not podcasts of the history of everything that has happened. Mm-hmm. And so being able to add value really came in the sense of information. Can I be ahead of what was coming out in tomorrow's news? Sometimes I learned that being out at night. When you're out at night, the workday gets extended and you're ahead of what's going to be what used to be printed in the paper tomorrow. Now, I guess we're all living in real time on social media. But when I go back to what I learned, you know, working for Randy, access became value. And so, you know, creating access and adding value, you know, again, when I don't have anything to offer, I can always add value. Doing the right thing as well. I think when we were a small group, and people didn't know our brand or, you know, weren't nationally known. The people that did know us could say they can trust us. We always did the right thing, whether, you know, it was spending people's money like it was our money. Mm-hmm. And really, really making sure that at the end of the day, even if it cost us money, our reputation, our name, I always say I never put my business card in front of my driver's license. I'm a big believer in that. I've worked with big brands. I'm part of a small company now. I know what it's like when people are looking at your business card versus your driver's license. And so doing the right thing always makes sure I never need to worry about what my business card is. My name is my reputation. And that will really kind of, drive me, to the point where I can make a difference for people. And I think when you're adding value, you're doing the right thing. And one bucket or the other, you're making a difference.
I have to agree wholeheartedly. You know, it's that old saying, do the right thing when no one's looking, and I just think that we see less and less of that today, where people don't put a lot of value on doing what's right instead of what they can do.
Well, it's funny. You mentioned do the right thing when no one's looking. We're in a society today where people are doing the right thing because we're looking and putting it on social media. And so it's like almost too many stories, if I can be fair, of, hey, look what I did to do the right thing. Everyone give me credit for buying a homeless person a sandwich or for doing something right at schools. I think it's great that we celebrate that. But what you said was powerful is do the right thing when no one's looking. It was something that my parents used to say about me a lot when I was a kid. Whether it was true or not, it put a lot of pressure on me to make sure I did that. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate you saying that, because I think we're in a society, and I'm a culprit. I monetize people putting things on Instagram. So, I'm going to do the right thing when people are looking. But I really appreciate you say doing it when people aren't looking, because I think we could all do a little bit more of that.
Absolutely. So what are some of your most outstanding accomplishments, or what is something that you're super proud of?
It sounds a little cheesy and a little sappy, but 8 years later, the individual accomplishments, I don't really have any. When I was 21 to 29, I can list off the biggest deals I did at the time or the most amazing things that I got to achieve that brands and maybe athletes or entertainers of the world of corporate America has never seen. When you start a company, when you're an entrepreneur, all that goes out the window. You really have two accomplishments. It's the people at your business and your family. So, while I can talk about my wife and my child being, my number one accomplishment, I'd say in business, the thing I'm most proud of is as a culture, we've been able to win awards with groups like Ad Age, with groups like Crane, for many years in a row now as a great place to work. And when you Google our company, when you talk about us, we're never really talking about the work we're doing or the campaigns we're doing. To be fair, we're a marketing agency. There's a lot of people involved in the work we do that's bigger than us. What we like to brag about, what we like to think differentiates us is, to your point, we're all working from our happy place. We all have a good time working with each other. And I think that shows up in the work we do with our clients. I like to joke with some of my clients that, hey, we make your teams, feel so good every day. You should pay us more just for boosting your morale. Truly what I'm proud of is that we take that level of our culture so seriously. And, that really ties back to about, doing the right thing, not putting the company in front of, your business card in front of your driver's license, and really making sure that at the end of the day, not everyone's going to work at Cogent forever, but when they move on, they're going to be proud of their time here. If they're not thrilled with where they went with it, they're going to be thrilled with at least the organization they worked for and, kind of what we stood for. We don't brag a lot about, our executives being who they are. We really kind of let them do that on their own through their own social media platforms and be, the superstars they are there. But when we do get a chance to brag, I can't be happier that that's kind of what we all rally around is, winning those awards and bragging about our culture. When it comes to recruiting people and getting new folks to join the company, it's really the number one thing people are finding us through. They're Googling best companies to work for, and that's what's showing up in our world. So it's exciting.
That is exciting. Exciting for sure. So on the opposite side of that, let's talk about a challenge that you have faced and then how you work through that.
There's work challenges every day. And I think, mm-hmm. We have a couple, key messages here of, we're not saving babies. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to learn from them. And the number one message I have, especially when it gets to my level, is all emergencies will work themselves out. And what I say that is because when we were 20 people, I had to be at the heart of every emergency, and I had to work them out. But for us to grow where we are today, from 25 to 50 plus people in a short amount of time, we just did the math. We have already hired 25 people this year, and we're not done. We expect to hire another 25 people over the next 12 months. So when you look at that growth, the number one, you know, thing for me was to be able to let go and say, okay, I need to be able to empower more people, trust more people to be able to hit that scale. In fact, I need to be able to get those people to grow and delegate and trust more people, because we're about to hit some obstacles culturally, financially. It's going to be a lot of fun. But a lot of companies, you know, as we see it in the marketing and the services space as well, when you get to our size, it's hard. It's stress. It's financial. You know, you become a bank sometimes. And so instead of retreating, we doubled down. We went on the offense. And, you know, like I said, we're experiencing even more growth of that. But, you know, you can look at it from projects. Those are just emergencies that'll work out. The scale of our business was something that, you know, really is has been a lot of fun to challenge ourselves with.
I know that that is a really great challenge for a lot of businesses, is that scale can be painful. Scaling a business can be painful because there's usually a lot of extra overhead that comes with that initially. And sometimes you have to take a risk and you have to maybe borrow money to make that happen. And you got to be willing to walk out on a limb. But then if you stick with your core values that got you to that first really great juncture that you felt like you needed to grow, you should be able to scale that with the proper resources.
Absolutely. And, you know, risk taking, you know, the risks I took at 29, I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
So they were great risks. Today, if I knew what I was doing, I would never take the risks I took. and you're right. Like, when I started this company, I thought I was going to be like marketing genius extraordinaire and having fun with all these great campaigns. No, it's finance, accounting, Ugh. HR, legal, insurance, all the stuff I didn't pay attention to in school, all the stuff I wish I did. But the meat of, like, I don't want to be – that's not why I did this. I did this to be a marketer. Now, as an entrepreneur, I have fun with insurance processes. I have fun with getting our companies a better operations. But if you're an entrepreneur and you want to go into business, you're giving up the fun and you're getting into business. It's a totally different game, totally different classes in school, by the way.
Absolutely. Or you need to find the right people to do those things if that isn't. But you still have to have, this is what I say, people go, oh, hire the right people. But man, you still have to have a pulse on it, because otherwise it can get away from you really, really quickly, because no one really cares about that like you have, like you care about it. So you might not be involved in the maybe day to day of it, but man, you got to have a pulse on it. Would you not agree?
I would agree 1,000%. Hiring, you can always hire people, but then you don't know what you're doing. They're going to screw it up at some capacity because it's not their business like it's yours. You can go on LegalZoom. You can, you know, piecemeal a bunch of little things. It will be wrong. It will cost you more at the end. You will screw up the taxes. You'll screw up something. You know, we've made a lot of mistakes that we laugh about, but, you know, anyone that's been doing this longer than us, you know, wouldn't laugh. So
right.
We can laugh at ourselves. We can have a little bit of fun with it. But, you know, there's no such thing as you can hire people as the business owner or the entrepreneur. You have to live it. And then you have to question those people every day, because they're going to do what's scale for them. You got to make it bespoke for you.
You know, I'm just laughing because we've been doing this. I've had my business now for 25 years and we're dealing with tax issues right now. And it is, I hired a new bookkeeper and I just assumed, wrong thing to do, that she was like all the other bookkeepers I had. And she just really didn't put anything in the categories that of expenses. And so it's a hot mess. And so, like, I'm sitting here having to spend all this time going back over everything, going, no, that was an expense. No, she doubled up our income. Like, she put the same income in two categories. And so it looks like we made double income in that category. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Now, fortunately, she's not here any longer. That didn't last very long, but it set us up for having a crazy year, and you just got to fix it. And now I'm like, okay, we're going to have to set new standards for the next person that walks in here to do it right. So I'm laughing because you can be going along and doing it right, and all it takes sometimes is just taking your eye off that ball, and then there you are with a situation that you have to fix. So
I always use the reference of you have your number one pitcher on the mound, and instead he's sitting in the back fixing the pitching machine.
Absolutely.
And it's like, you know, what do you want me doing? Do you want me throwing strikes every day, or do you want me fixing equipment? And, you know, that's where I tell everyone, you know, take the risk, start a business, do what you want to do, but understand that you're worried about the lights coming on, not what happens in the park. That's going to happen by the team. And, you know, when I go back to like what I'm most proud of, again, it's that culture, it's that team, it's the fact that they can really, run it from top to bottom. And as long as I keep the lights on and make sure, you know, we're all taking the field, the rest, they kind of do on their own.
Yep. Now, you made a comment that was like actually a really great nugget that people are watching this or listening to this, and they are driving down the road, or they're working out, or they're interrupted by a child who's got a good question or needs something. And sometimes we miss the little nuggets, you know? And so I want to point it out. And that was that you said nothing is a real crisis or emergency, that it will work itself out. And I just think this is an important lesson for everybody out there. And it took me a while to get it, but it would be like someone would call here at our office at like 4:45 and everybody's leaving at 5, and they want a proposal and they have to have it today by 5. And it might be central time there. So like we're scrambling around, people are staying off after work, we're like trying, it's 6:30 and we're still getting it over to them. And then I talk to them to follow up, and it's like, oh, we haven't, 3 days later, we haven't got a chance to open that up yet. Oh, we haven't even got a chance to look at it yet. And so I've just learned over the years that there's nothing that's ever a real crisis unless someone's injured and having a situation. But it's like, you know what? We'll be happy to get. I've learned to not be afraid of losing a deal or something, and just being professional about it and saying, we'll have that to you first thing in the morning. And just not creating a crisis out of every little thing, because there is no real huge emergencies.
I love to hear you say that. I mean, if you can calculate the amount of times we, and I say we, everybody listening, spent a vacation, a Friday evening, a Saturday afternoon, they left work early to spend time with their family, but took that call. How many of those hours have we spent to something that is so important? We're traveling in another country and we're standing in a random area trying to keep this conversation, stay on this conference call because you just can't miss it. You add up all those hours, you know, we owe ourselves some of our life back. And, you know, when I finally, you know, kind of heard that message from somebody else, actually, it was their away message that they were taking their summer time off. It stuck with me of like, how many times have I been there that if I wasn't there, all would have worked out? And when you do the math, the few that wouldn't have worked out still would have been okay. We weren't saving any babies, as we like to say. So, you know, we truly do believe that. And what I've also found too is, you know, two things to your point. We're in the same business. We're in the service business. We want that call at 6:01 on a Friday because some other agency probably didn't answer it.
Yep.
We have an always on mentality, and that's the most exciting call we can get. But a lot of times we forget to ask that important question. Do you need it tonight? We kind of have this reaction to say, I will get it for you right away. But sometimes we forget to say, hey, it's Friday. I want to put the best effort into it, and my team's already headed out. In order for us to put the best work forward, we can have it to you by Wednesday. If that's not okay, maybe the Tuesday afternoon. And sometimes they say, hey, Wednesday is great, and crisis averted. Or sometimes they say, look, Wednesday doesn't work. Can you have it to me by Tuesday morning? Cool. At least crisis for 2 days is averted. And so, you know, part of that is just, you know, the emergencies working themselves out. We're trying to just get everybody to not overreact. You get these exciting phone calls. We want that business Friday night, but ask the question once before you commit to creating the chaos. And to your point, most of the time, you don't lose the business. Or if you were going to lose the business, you probably don't want that business, because anyone that needs you Friday night through the weekend is either A, going to be ready to pay you a ton of money, or B, is a chaotic person themselves, and you're better off keeping your life open.
100% agreed. That's I think that's a good lesson here for everybody. So that's awesome. So in keeping with the theme of the show, what does working from your happy place mean to you?
For me, it's a little bit of a dangerous mix, and I say that just because they always tell you, you know, to never mix business and pleasure. But I like working with my friends. I love working with great people. Especially when you're in a services business, enjoying the people you work with really starts the foundation of making a happy place. Mm-hmm. We have a very fun exercise we do for every new team member where we call their 13-year-old self. And the thought is that around 13, you can argue 10, you can argue 12, you can argue 15. But around 13, you realize being a fireman, an astronaut, or a ballerina may not work out. You may not make the NBA, and they start to give you the guidance counselor to take life seriously. And they kind of rip the fun and the joy and the imagination out of us. So what we like to do is look back, and I kind of go back to those kids wearing blue shirts I used to see walking down 57th Street. But if my 13-year-old self met me today, based on what really drove me at 13, and we do this slide where you write down what was important to you in music and movies. It's culture, it's music, movies, sports, the news. And we have you put up a slide with all those fun data points and also a picture of yourself. And one, it kind of humanizes you to everyone right away. But two, we like to say back, if my 13-year-old self looked at me today, would they be excited and thrilled with the professional that I became? Or am I on the wrong path here? And especially when you work in a services business or you work in marketing where it's not real estate or banking where the money's just insane in your early 20s, you really want to make sure that, you know, you're enjoying what you do. So, you know, working from my happy place means that my 13-year-old self, I think, would get a kick out of sitting in my office every day working on what we worked on, and he'd be the best focus group ever. But also, he would truly be inspired to work harder in school to get to where we got to. So, you know, I always look at that as something as I can kind of hang my hat on to say, am I on the right path, and am I happy with what I'm doing?
I love that exercise. That's awesome that you do that. I think that's fun. I hope everybody got a good takeaway on that one. That's I've never heard anyone else say that. So I love it.
Well, it's fun. It's fun for me because I'm 37. So to hear people that are born in 94 and I was born in 81 talk about what they were doing when they were, you know, 13 years old is scary to me. But it's been a lot of fun, and it's also a really, really fun time to see people's pictures of them when they were 13. It always gets everybody going a little bit.
Great. So what advice would you give to others wanting to be entrepreneurs?
You know, there's a big, you know, it's a big pusher on entrepreneurs. I think, you know, people like Gary Vee have really come out with the cool saying that for the first time, entrepreneurship is cool. Kids are going to be in school and be looked at as cool for being entrepreneurs and not just jocks. And you've inspired all these entrepreneurs to come out, and I love it. And there's more gig economy and businesses and ways for people to take those risks. The one thing that I'm really not in love with is, you know, this mantra around failing. We have a little bit of a saying here that we have no fear of failure. And we talk a lot about what failure means and what you can learn from failure. But failure being okay has somehow become an okay message. I'm excited to fail. I'll learn from my failures. Yeah, if you fail, that's a great message and that's a great way to be. But failure is not an option. It's not okay. It should never be an option. Failure is painful. It should be painful. It's costly. And it can really, really have an effect on someone. And so don't start a business with the mindset of I'll fail and learn, I'll fail and learn. Start a business with I can't fail. I refuse to fail. I will not lose. And you put that mindset into it every day, especially if you're taking other people's money. The option for failure should never exist. And there's something to be said about, you know, there's time to hang it up or there's time to throw in your cards. Fine. And at that point, you know, a good friend will tell you that. But the option of failure has become such a conversation today. So I think the best thing I would say is it's not okay to fail. Doesn't matter what you learn. It's not okay.
You know what? I agree. I teach like there is no failure. As long as you are moving forward, putting your best foot forward, learning from your mistakes. Like, you're not going to fail. But I do believe, because I have, this is an area where we've done a lot of research. So I teach goal setting. That's like my big thing, is helping people identify where they are, where they want to go, set goals that are realistic and all that good stuff. So what we're seeing is less and less people are setting goals. And so when you dig into that and ask why, the number one reason that they don't want to set a goal. So they don't want to say out loud, well, this is where I want to go. This is what I'd like to achieve. This is where I'd like to be, is because of the fear of failure. So they just say, well, I'll see how it goes. And so I think now there's been this big push in, well, it's okay to fail, you know, in this sort of, I don't know, way to try to help get people past setting any kind of expectation or goal in the first place instead of just standing still. And that's what we're seeing with a lot of people. They're paralyzed in just standing still and not moving forward in any way, shape, or form. But I'm with you 100%. We don't teach it's okay to fail. We teach there is no failure. As long as you are you might have a goal and you might not hit that goal exactly, but even if you come short of it, you'll figure out, okay, what do I need to tweak? What do I need to adjust? How am I going to get there? What additional resources do I need? But if you never tried in the first place, you're never going to figure that piece out.
Oh, completely. And, you know, you talk about measurement. I fail every day.
Right.
But the way I'm measuring failure is not a failure. And we use a great analogy here, which is batting average versus free throws. And for the sports fans out there, the highest batting average ever, someone goes like 4 for 10 in baseball. They're the best player ever. In basketball, your Shaqs and your Wilts, they went like 5 or 6 for 10. They're the worst free throw shooter ever. And so if I can go 3 for 10 or 2 for 10 in my business, I'm a killer. I'm one of the best players ever. Mm-hmm. But if I measure myself that I got to go 9 for 10 or 8 for 10, like in free throws, I'm going to fail every day. So I can look at my day and say, you know what? I reached out to 5 people today. 2 wrote back. Man, 3 people failed me. But the opposite of it is I hit 40%. I'm better than Derek Jeter and Mickey Mantle. And that's the type of message that we try to get people to understand is, yes, you're going to fail. But in the grand scheme of it, to your point, if it's moving you forward and you're measuring success properly, you'll never be in a position to fail. You'll always be in a position. But when you talk about people saying they'll try things, I see that a lot here. It scares me to death. I push our team, go meet your clients, go see them. And there's always the, well, I will when, or I'm going to maybe do this then, versus why aren't you there every single day? It should be a blitz. It should be straight to Baghdad 365 days a year. But to your point, now it's micro goals. You saw them once this year. Can you see them twice next year? But the measurement setting's huge. We have a great story with one of our most successful team members who, when he got to a certain point of growth, he started to fail a little bit. And we sat him down and we said, listen, you're a 3 out of 10. And that's scary. So the other 7, we're going to cut out of your work. You're never going to see that again. And now you're 3 out of 3. You're an A+ and you're a rock star. And as long as you stay in your lane of these 3 attributes, you will be one of our best team members ever. And he still is to this day. But for us, it was also about measuring what he actually was going to be successful at and getting rid of what, not what we thought was needed, but just wasn't going to be realistic.
That's great. So it's a great story. So what are some new and exciting things that you're working on? And then tell our listeners how they can find you.
Absolutely. So for me, like I said, I don't get to do too much of the fun marketing campaigns that we do, year round for brands like Corona, for Hasbro, for DirecTV. I don't get to too much of that. I get to do a lot of the fun recruiting. And I think the biggest thing that I'm focusing on right now is the Gen Z entering into the workforce. And, you know, there was a big push when we were growing up that millennials were, you know, a certain way and demanded certain things and were changing the the way we approach business. And we did a great job, I think, recruiting and retaining the right team through that. Now at Gen Z, I'm even more excited. As you get to know them and the access they've had to information and how they really care about what's behind a brand today, not the history of it yesterday, I'm excited for this workforce. I keep using the cliche of Gen Z is going to save this world. I really think that when they can look at brands like Quip and put as much value to them as Crest, when brands like Uber can have more value than our auto companies, when brands like Harry's and Dollar Shave Club can have more brand recognition and cool factor than Gillette, I really see a generation that's going to really help shape this world and get us to a much more sustainable and healthier place. So recruiting is what I'm excited about, and you know, putting our brand out there. To learn more about us, you can see us on Instagram. It's at Cogent World, CogentWorld, or at CogentWorld.com.
Thank you so much, Mark. This was a wonderful interview. I've enjoyed it so much, and so many really great gold nuggets in there for our listeners. And I just want to remind all of our listeners that if you don't want to miss a single episode of Work From Your Happy Place, so make sure that you subscribe. And Mark and I both would appreciate a wonderful review. So with that, thanks everybody for tuning in today. And Mark, thank you once again for sharing your time with us at Work From Your Happy Place.
Thank you. Happy Tuesday.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.